I'm not playing Ask Me Another. I said it's a viaduct. Want to introduce this show.
So who aren't you then?
If you I'm not that. Justin Souther.
I am, actually.
Oh. Let's see. Well, he's not being very helpful, is he? Pardon me, no. My name is Spaulding. It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Chandler.
This is Ken Hankey.
Where?
Right here.
Oh, okay.
To my left. Where are we, Ken?
You're right. Oh, no, what are we?
Did we do that part first?
Yeah.
Oh, we're Elitist Bastards.
Thank you. Okay. Let's clear that up. Okay. Yes.
And where are we?
We are in the Cinema Lounge.
The Carolina. Yes.
Asheville. And it's located where?
Hendersonville Road.
Yes, it is. The lovely, picturesque garden spot of Asheville.
Right.
And have we been to the movies?
I've been to a few.
Okay. So I guess we're going to dissect this experience after you do your Camille act. Okay.
Uh-huh. We are. I know that I'm not supposed to do that while we're recording, but...
Yeah, he has consumption, ladies and gentlemen. It's a sad thing, but there you go.
Heartbreak.
It is. The heartbreak of psoriasis. No, consumption.
Coughed up blood.
He did. He coughed up blood.
Later I'm going to let... an Asian gang shoot me.
Makes sense to me.
Go clean sweep.
Yeah. Sounds good. What do you want to do now?
I guess talk about these movies.
Oh. So, what did you see this weekend?
Which one should I start with? Paleta, I believe is how
yes,
it's pronounced.
Yes, it's Paleta, not Palata.
I think it's Paleta. Okay. I forget.
Like Paleta de Soccer, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's a Brazilian term for... It's a pickup soccer game. And the movie is about soccer.
Are there such things?
Yes.
Pickup soccer game? Okay.
Apparently there's a lot of them because the movie is about these two college grads who... It's a documentary.
Yes,
they've decided that they don't know what to do with themselves, so they're going to go travel the world playing soccer.
It sounds perfectly reasonable to me. I'm assuming, therefore, that these people have some sort of close to unlimited finances.
They talk about getting grants.
To travel the world and play pickup soccer.
I guess you can say, hey, I'm making a documentary. Give me some money. I don't have to pay you back.
It's actually
a really good idea.
It is. It's pretty good. We should probably try that.
Yeah.
But not
you can go travel the... Oh.
Not pick up soccer games, no.
That'd be a good documentary.
I almost said
Ken
something
Hankey
which
plays
I'm...
plays soccer.
I almost said something which I'm really glad I didn't. Okay. Because Steve wouldn't have edited it out. I know when I'm better off.
Anyway, so they go around playing soccer and telling the stories of these people they encounter. And for... I think a lot of it will depend on how much you like sports and soccer. But... For the most part, the stories are interesting. They don't... The focus is never too sharpened, so you're not spending much... It moves along at a pretty quick pace. And a lot of the stuff is really interesting. I thought them paying their way to get into a Bolivian prison... And it's a very...
That sounds pretty kinky,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, well... And apparently the prison has no guards. They just put all these prisoners in there. And the guards only show up when there's issues. So it's just sort
you mean
of
like when
like
the new magazines arrive?
Maybe.
Okay.
And they go in this prison and play soccer. Or they go to Africa and play with these guys that make moonshine for a living. And they're only the only good thing pretty much that they have is that they can go play soccer every once in a while. So, for the most part,
it sounds like their encounters are more interesting than they are.
Well, they've just got, the girl wants to be a writer. The guy is and they've both had college careers playing soccer.
I shouldn't think a girl would have any trouble at all getting into a prison.
Well. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where I was.
You were talking about the girl.
The girl has dreams of becoming a writer. The guy puts up billboards for a living while his parents want him to go to law school, and he's kind of reluctant. So this is sort of them trying to feel out what they're going to do with their lives.
Law school, billboards.
Right. So. Okay. And that's fine, but compared to the people we meet, it's not as interesting. I think the problem with the movie is that there's this feeling that the filmmakers felt like they had to have a plot and story in this documentary, and ultimately a point that the people were following. When really, I don't think we did. I don't think this was needed. It should have just been about the people they meet, and that would have been fine. It didn't need this framing story of these two college grads.
Do they come to any conclusion?
She tried.
No, I'm not telling you. Don't tell me the conclusion. Okay. I just want to know if they do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's nothing very exciting, though. So
okay. Well, that's.
It's questionable how much they've learned.
I was hoping that she may decide to go to Detroit and find happiness in the automotive industry.
No. That does not happen.
I want to hear from anybody who knows what that line was from.
What are you looking for? I don't know.
It's the same as moving to Montana.
No. Okay. It is not a Frank Zappa line. No. Okay. It's out of a movie.
Okay. So what else did we watch? What did you watch, Ken?
Well, I watched Monsters.
Right, which is a movie you... Where are you at on this movie?
I'm on a 3.5-star basis with this movie. It's an impressive achievement for what it is. Mm-hmm.
It cost what, $15,000 to make?
Something ridiculous.
Do you think that's a legitimate?
Well, I'm sure that's not.
You
hear that, but I'm sure that by the time it has been made into something that can actually be shown to the real movie going public in terms of sound and all the rest of it, that it has been considerably cleaned up.
Right.
You know, it's like the $7,000 Rodriguez picture, which was considerably more than that by the time it actually made it into theaters. But I can believe, if we are to believe, and I see no reason not to, that all the special effects were done by the writer, director, production designer, and I guess cinematographer, on his computer.
Plays all the roles, right?
Yeah, he does. You know, he's just like he's beyond the realm of triple threat, in every sense of the word. I'm a little bit annoyed right now to find that the Independent Spirit Awards in Great Britain have named him best director this year for this movie, which I think that's definitely overkill. You know, the thing about it is that it is, and hands down, I say this with no reservation whatsoever, it is the finest ambulatory, glowing octopus movie I have ever seen. Giant octopus, I might add. You know, if you want a movie about glowing...
Better than
glowing,
Ride of the Monster? That wasn't really ambulatory.
And it doesn't glow.
If Ed Wood had the money...
If Ed Wood had had money, his octopus would have walked and glowed.
That might be your intro.
Yes, you never know. It would have been good. It would have been good, yes. But no, I mean, it's... Someone said to me that it was like a National Geographic special combined with a Werner Herzog movie. And that made a certain amount of sense to me, and I looked at it in terms of Gira, Wrath of God. And then it also occurred to me afterwards that it also is kind of like Apocalypse Now, and it also is kind of like The African Queen, if you want to get really down to it, because it does have this long jungle boat trek, which I suppose also makes it like a ride at Disney World. But the problem with it for me is that you have to get to this. And to get to this, you have these two uninteresting, self-absorbed characters who have to get themselves into a situation where they have to make this boat trip to go across the infected zone, which is where it's a dividing line or a dividing area between the United States and Mexico, where the big octopus people or creatures live. And yes, there's definitely a crossing the border subtext involved in this. And the problem with this is, and I do blame the director for this, I mean, this explains it, that he had them make up all their dialogue, but it doesn't excuse the fact that it's this really bad, boring, mumblecore crap dialogue. And you've got about, it feels like about an hour, and I'm sure it's less than 30 minutes, of working your way to that point. And getting there is pretty tedious. Once you get there, it's okay, although I do know people who find the ending to be incredibly inconclusive. The bottom line is if you're interested in do-it-yourself filmmaking or science fiction, you want to see this. If you are interested in neither, or you know, don't care for giant, glowing, ambulatory octopi, then probably you don't. So there. So what else did you see?
I saw Warrior's Way. I thought it was great. Okay. I'm not saying it was a great movie. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I mean, I know you called me up and said that I was the only person you could think of for
sure. There's maybe
a
couple other people. Most people are not going to like this movie. I think the reviews is kind of, it's like 50% now.
Probably somewhere in that range.
I'm kind of surprised it's at that. I know someone, you know that I don't, who, this film critic who, Luke Thompson.
Yeah, I figured that's who it was.
Hated it. I don't know if he hated it, but he just thought it was,
right,
compared it to Geely. So,
ooh.
Yeah, and it's nowhere.
I don't always agree with Luke. This is not.
No,
you
no,
know,
but I'm saying there are.
Do not etch that in stone, you know.
There is a certain type of person that's not going to like this, and there's a very smaller type of person that is going to.
I would have almost thought that he would like this. Almost. Okay. Which kind of surprised me. And of course, I haven't seen it, and that might explain it once I do.
And I talked to some people who saw it before I did that had didn't really care for it and didn't feel that it went did enough for them.
It's a so movie. I went what in, did they want it to do?
Well, the way I had, somebody had told me was that it was like a song and they were waiting for the hook that never came.
No, that's when you're it, at amateur night and you're on the stage. Okay. You're waiting for the hook and hope it never comes.
For me, this wasn't an issue. Because I don't know how much of it was. I don't think a lot of it was having lowered expectations, because the trailer made it the Ninja's Dam line, which actually isn't in the movie.
Not in the movie.
No. Unless I
that's
missed
why
it.
They didn't
There's
name
a chance
it Ninja's
I missed
Dam,
it, but I
which
don't
would have been a much better title than The Warrior's Way, which sounds so goddamn pompous and serious.
Well, the movie is not all that serious. It's
well, what was it that you know, and this may not be quite the way you feel about it, but it seemed to sum up what you've been saying about it to me, was that somebody said, if I have to explain to you why a clown shooting a ninja in the Wild West is 40 kinds of awesome, there's no point in trying.
Right. I mean, it's the way I put it, it's Baz Luhrmann meets Sergio Leone.
Who wins?
I'd say it's more Luhrmann. It's not as frantic as he is, but there's definitely, that's what's going to turn off most people with this movie, is how stylized. It's very much a movie. Like, there's nothing realistic about it.
Uh-huh.
It's got this
what?
Sort of.
You've got a movie about ninjas in the Wild West.
Right.
And it's not realistic?
No, but I think there's people that would buy that concept if it was realistic or if it wasn't as stylized as this movie is. So well, we see badass action when
let
it's
me put it to you
when
this
it's
way.
Sort of
star rating or no, I think I have to see this movie before it departs, which
yes.
means I probably need to do it with all considerable speed.
Yes. I think I'm curious to see what you think about it.
I might not tell you.
Probably will.
Probably, but I might
you
get
like
all,
telling people these
I'm,
things.
I, like,
I mean
I like you, I might get all stubborn with you though.
I doubt it.
You have to coerce me.
Try to hold that in.
Yeah.
That. Anyway.
You needed a better line than that, but okay. Anyway, you. So,
we're improvising.
So,
Ken,
so
in
you
the spirit of
you recommend it?
Yes, I do.
He does. Okay.
I thought it was very good and interesting. I think it was probably the most interesting thing that came out this week. Not having seen everything, but.
Well, the only other thing that opened this week is the much divided, divisive, and locally in ways I'm not even going to begin to get into, controversial, Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest,
right.
which opened for some obscure reason. Well, I think it's because the distributor has no idea where Hendersonville is. In Hendersonville,
is there any reason they should?
No, there's no reason why anyone should know where Hendersonville is unless they actually live there.
I would say, no offense to Hendersonville, but I went to high school there.
Oh.
There is no reason to know where Hendersonville is.
Well, I looked at a house there, so, you know, I mean, then,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
calmer heads prevailed, and,
well,
and you know, we didn't buy it.
Those late-night
anyway,
trips to Walmart were pretty expensive.
Yeah, well, it went to, in any case, it opened there last week, and apparently did the kind of business that you would expect a movie like this to do in Hendersonville.
Okay.
And is opening this Friday at the Fine Arts. I suppose we should probably note that both Monsters and Palaeta, as you call it, are opening at the Carolina. And that The Warrior's Way is still barely playing at a lot of places. In any case, the Girl Who Kicked Over the Hornet's Nest, which is the third and supposedly final chapter in the Girl trilogies.
The Millennium.
Millennium trilogy, yes. I guess that's probably the easier way of saying it.
Which I guess makes more sense. In some way, I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, well, I suppose. But it's only because it's the name of the magazine.
Oh.
You know, that's really what it comes down to. And,
okay, that makes no sense.
Don't argue with me.
I'm not arguing
okay.
with you. I'm arguing with them because it makes no sense.
Oh, well.
Why you would name your trilogy after
the magazine?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
instead
know.
Of maybe the main character or some other thing.
The Girl.
Well, that makes more sense than.
It's The Girl trilogy. No, never mind. This is all digressing from the point, which is whether the movie's any damn good.
Is it?
Yes. It is fine. It is no. Despite the fact that it's gotten worse reviews, it is no worse than the second film.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it may be a little bit better than the second film because at least you don't get to the end and go, well, what happened then?
Right.
However, if you compare it to the first film, they both have this essential problem. The first film works fine by itself.
Right.
The second and third film do not. I mean, you could watch the first film and never have a reason to see the others. Unless you just really liked the characters or are a movie critic. And or read the books, I suppose. But there's no way you even understand what's going on in the second film, I don't believe, if you haven't seen the first film. And at the end of the second film, you're waiting for. It has that middle movie syndrome. You're waiting for the final installment. And in fact, this even has a kind of last time on CSI.
Okay.
The thing in it to bring you up to speed as to what's going on. But what goes on is nonetheless, it's interesting. If you're involved with the series, if you're involved with the characters, you'll be interested in it. I mean, there's no question. I mean, it's not going to rewrite the history of cinema. But I suspect that the problem with it is, to some degree, yes, it is. It does have to do with the fact that the first film had a different writer and a different director than these two films. But I think it really is inherent in the material that this was going to be a problem. That, you know, you had to have the other films. But you can say that about any series, I suppose. But in this case, it seems particularly I don't know. It seems more pronounced somehow. But it does pretty much everything you expect it to do. And
right. And
goodness knows, Tony Goldwyn should have watched the trial scenes in this before he made Convicted, and then he might have had some kind of idea to how to make an interesting trial scene, which he certainly did not.
I'm not sure I've ever seen an interesting trial scene, is it?
Oh. Well, I'm sure we could do something about that.
It's a screening room for you.
Yeah, probably.
Interesting is. Trial scenes.
Interesting trial scenes.
My Cousin Vinny.
By Pete. Can we step in the back room for a minute? And what is the Thursday Horror Picture Show?
Phantasm.
And what is Phantasm?
I won't say what I was going to say. Well, as I quoted you, paraphrased you, I guess.
Close enough either way,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, it's the best drive-in movie ever made. Is that...
Yes, that's fair. Right? That's close enough, yes. I think what I actually said was it's the ultimate drive-in movie. Okay. It is what you always hope a drive-in movie is going to be, and it never is. Right. I mean, this one turns out to be.
And, yeah, it's a pretty absurd concept about... And completely absurd.
I bought it, but okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have an inordinately tall Undertaker, conveniently named, the tall man.
Who likes cold things.
Yes.
Yes.
Standing behind the ice cream truck.
Yeah, that's in fact, you'll find that's still in the paper.
Okay, good.
I think, or somewhere I've used it.
Okay, online probably. He's taking dead bodies, I'm assuming reanimating them in some fashion, squishing them down to dwarf size.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming he's putting them in robes too, because we never see anybody. These little...
Well, you want uniformity in your workers.
Yeah, I know, but I mean...
Somebody puts them in these robes. Maybe it's part of the process when they, you know, shrinks them down to dwarf size.
Right.
And
so
then...
So you have these little dwarf zombie...
Creatures.
Robed zombie dwarves. Like, ahead of myself. Running around. Also, they're being stored in this room in big plastic barrels. So they can be transported to...
Well, where else?
Yeah, okay. I mean... In the basement, maybe, but just so they can be transported to a... Ken's watching Mrs. Doubtfire.
No, I'm not. I'm being horrified.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
I can understand what you're saying.
Okay.
While I was watching people play with toy dinosaurs,
so they can be shoot off to this other planet
and perform menial labor.
Yes. So that's what waits for you in the afterlife, I guess.
Great. You get turned into a dwarf in a robe and pick lettuce.
Presumably. So you find out in this whole plot is uncovered. Apparently it's been going on for a century, maybe longer. I don't know. You get a bit of a clue, but it finally is uncovered by a teenager and his older brother. Sort of
and the ice cream salesman, Reggie.
Yes.
And
they sort of go all like, it's this ultimate teenage boy fantasy of, we've got guns and knives and gratuitous nudity and we're going to drive muscle cars around and fight this evil alien Undertaker. And the acting's bad, the budget's worse, but it works because it's sort of ultimately kind of sweet-natured and there's nothing sadistic about
it. Well, the automatic head juicer is
right.
Just,
I forgot about that. But it's sort of a nice little movie if you can get past all its shortcomings.
And the gore and the...
Right. And Don Coscarelli, the thing that... There's two things that strike me about this movie is Coscarelli's, the way he edits.
Mm.
He'll cut dialogue over scenes in kind of an interesting way to push the plot forward. And it's the way he does that is way more sophisticated than anything else in the movie, than the acting, than the special effects, than the budget. And I really like the score to this movie. I think it's really interesting, and it's sort of...
It's a long time since I've seen it, so I'll be looking...
I don't know
Thursday.
If you would... It would appeal to you, but I think it... I was talking to somebody about this the other day, how kind of ahead of its time the score is. So you should pay attention.
Well, I feel like that you've thrown down the gauntlet now. I have to see about this score.
I don't know. There's, I think at one point they're using a water bottle as an instrument. It's very kind of odd, but it works.
Okay.
And it's probably something, it's surprisingly good for when you look at the rest of the movie, like, again, the acting.
So what you're saying is the editing, particularly the sound editing, and the...
No, there's some bad Foley work in this movie. I noticed that watching it again. The kid's walking through the mausoleum, and there's all these... And it's all for, like, atmosphere where you have clicking shoes echoing. But he's got sneakers on.
He's got taps on his sneakers.
I guess. I don't know.
Good heavens, you're such a...
And they don't always match up.
Well.
But nevertheless.
Maybe that's intentional.
Maybe. It's a you could probably... When you get to
it's
the twist...
It's an alienating effect.
You get to the twist ending... You can pretty much explain anything in this movie.
I suppose that's true. Boy.
Yeah. So, there you go. I think it's great. It's
well, I look
cheesy.
Forward to seeing it again because it's a long time. I'm, in fact,
and
I'm
hoping
even,
we get a good crowd for it because I think it's a movie I would like to see with a whole lot of people.
It would be nice. And, you know, at the same time, I'm not, you know, laying money on it because it's still going to be cold. And, you know, it's kind of like tonight. You know, I personally believe that anybody who shows up tonight to watch a movie is crazy.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't have come out in this weather if I didn't have to, because it's freaking cold out there.
I'm bundled up. It's fine.
Well, yeah, maybe
I've been
so.
Indoors.
I've been indoors all day, but, you know, I had to go from the house to the car, from the car to here. I mean, it was, you know.
It's laborious.
It was. I could have frozen to death. You could have found me buried in a snowbank.
Frozen
to yes.
the car door. Cigarette in his mouth.
If it is snowbank, and I, you know.
The end of The Shining.
Yeah.
And next Tuesday, Film Society
is the Marx Brothers in A Night at the Opera,
which we had a debate about which Marx Brothers.
Yes, we had a kind of a debate about which Marx Brothers film is the best film to.
Well, you were wanting to introduce people. I think something I never pointed out to you is that I don't always feel like we need to be introducing people to things. Maybe I'm wrong in that. Like I feel like,
you know, I know.
I like to think our people are savvy enough.
Yeah, but did you watch? I mean, we only had like 25 people here last week, which doesn't surprise me because we were in the. You want to talk about weather? I mean, that was like we were in this freaking hurricane, and you know, I think. One person had seen the film before, maybe it was two.
Right.
I think three or four people, and that's adding the one person in,
right.
had seen an Ernst Lubitsch picture before. And I think you can add one more person to that count, and you have the number of people who had ever even heard of Ernst Lubitsch before.
Right.
You know, how many people... I was surprised when we ran the Mae West double feature. Uh-huh. There were a number of people here. They'd heard of Mae West. They had never seen her.
Right. That's probably fair.
So, you know, I mean, and I just like think that this is, I know you're in favor of the full immersion baptism into the, you know,
right.
the ultra lunacy of the Paramount films and its complete anarchy in the traditional sense of the word, which has nothing to do really with the
well, I think
current
it just comes
sense
down
of the
to,
word.
Like, I like A Night at the Opera, just not as much.
Well, that's kind of, you know, I mean, to me, it's like...
And we can blame Leonard Maltin for that.
It's the sixth or the seventh. It's my sixth or seventh favorite.
Right.
And it depends on my mood as to whether I like it or Day at the Races better. I like the story and the two songs better in this than I like the story in A Day at the Races. But A Day at the Races has that wonderful musical number.
That's pretty, yeah, which is, for me, the only redeeming thing about...
I mean
it's
stuff.
Okay,
I mean,
but
the,
it moves
the,
so slow, comparatively.
I
and then you get to that.
If you see the film with an audience, I think you might find out that it doesn't necessarily move that slow. I mean, because I've seen it with appreciative audiences.
Okay.
You know, so we'll see. But it's definitely.
Or maybe it's a case of that musical sequence being so much.
I think what it is in Day at the Races is the musical sequence is better than the rest of the movie.
Easily.
You know, and I don't think it.
Nothing else comes close to that.
No.
There's not a lot of stuff in any Marx Brothers film that comes.
No, I would have
I mean,
to. You know, it's
so.
But we're not showing that one, so
no.
Why are we talking about it?
Maybe we can just show that scene.
Maybe. There you go. But in any case, this is what we're showing, and this is what you should come see.
Yes.
So there.
Whether you have seen the Marx Brothers or not.
Exactly. And if you haven't seen the Marx Brothers, you should. And if you don't like it, then that's another story altogether.
What do we have opening this?
Well, other than monsters and Paleta and the girl who kicked the hornet's nest, we have Jesus the Lion Part 3,
uh-huh.
or Chronicles of Narnia.
The Dawn Treader?
The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I haven't ever read these books, so I don't know, but I think that's what it's called.
They're classics, Ken.
Whatever. Nonetheless, that's opening. I've seen the first two. I didn't like the first one. I like the second one a little bit better. The second one pretty much underperformed amazingly, like did about half the business of the first one. But it has been... You know,
they still have this idea that it's a big deal, so we'll see.
I know. I mean, you know, this is what really gets me. I mean, Disney told Jesus the Lion to take a hike, and he wandered in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights and found himself at 20th Century Fox and of course, Walden Media, which, you know, Walden Media is this right-wing Christian group. And naturally, they decided that it should be kept alive by all means.
And in 3D.
And in 3D, yes, you know, on certain screens, right. in certain theaters. And as a result, it's they made this movie, and it has been overbooked like crazy. You can't turn around in this town come Friday without bumping into the Chronicles of Narnia. It's on two screens here. It's on three screens there. It's on, you know, it's like, really? This is not Harry Potter. I don't care what you would love it to be. It's not Harry Potter. I mean, I will be vastly surprised if it does the kind of business they're apparently expecting it to do. But we'll find out this weekend.
And there's also The Tourist.
The Tourist, yes.
Which has...
Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie.
I was
going to
say, it has one good thing going for it, Johnny Depp. Yeah. One bad thing going for it.
Angelina Jolie.
Yes.
It has Paul Bettany. And it has Rufus Sewell, who should have had a much better career than he ever has. And it's directed by the guy whose name I will not even attempt to pronounce. The German fellow who made The Lives of Others, which people went lollipops over back in 2006, and which I still hold it against that the Academy gave it Best Foreign Language Film over Pan's Labyrinth, but that's another story altogether. That was a sham of a travesty of a mockery of two shams, but nonetheless they did. And this is his first English language film, and here's the really odd thing about it. Columbia has managed to keep a total review blackout going, at least through today. There is not one single review that has been leaked to any media source on this movie. Now, that's kind of peculiar. And normally when a movie doesn't get any reviews, you figure it blows goats. Well, and this may well, but at the same time, I kind of admire the fact they were able to keep absolutely anybody from getting a review out. So maybe there's some other peculiar...
weird.
Maybe.
It's always, it can always be one of those things that we'll like and everybody else will hate.
Yeah, well, that is true. There are a few of those. When's the last time you watched Running Scared? We've got to inflict that on an audience. Yeah, well, so... In any case, it opens this weekend.
You're reviewing both of these.
Yes, I'm reviewing both of these because you're engaged in weightier literary endeavors.
Yes.
So
will we keep that a surprise?
You will keep that a surprise since, I mean, ideally I shouldn't even know about it, but you know I do.
No,
so.
I mean you kind of have to.
It
would have been funnier if you didn't.
That's true, and you've also not you haven't interviewed me.
I don't.
So
we're going to talk about that.
Oh, okay. We're going to talk about that, but not until Steve turns off the recorder. So I guess that's that. Steve has a mouthful. He's eating during this, which shows the attention to detail of a true craftsman. You drop something. And
Kleenex. I mean, tissue. Kleenex is brand name.
Well, it could be.
Fine, Kleenex
is
brand.
Is it Kleenex?
I don't remember.
You may have dropped a puff. I don't know. I'd like to. I want some clarification here. Anyway, facial tissue.
I just want to say facial.
Well,
disgusting, Ken.
We're signing off. Up. Oh, thank God. Okay. I've certainly had enough
had
of this.
Yeah.
I'm sure the audience has. So,
I think this is our best one yet.
It probably is, yes. So, I'm Ken
Hanke. One for the archives.
Yes. Anyway, in any case, let us close out the evening
yes.
by saying that you are Justin Souther.
You're Ken Hanke.
Yes.
We're Elitist Bastards.
We are indeed, and we come to you through the benevolence of the Mountain Express, whom we are convinced never listens to this crap. And we are produced and cohered and otherwise kept in check by the pizza-eating
Steve. He's our own Ninja Turtle.
That's right.
Steve Schoenfeld.
Very own Ninja Turtle. It's Steve Raphael Schoenfeld.
Yes.
At least he didn't get Michelangelo.
He was my favorite.
He's yeah. got, the nunchucks are cool, but he's the goofiest one.
Yeah.
Raphael's
the
one.
He's the angsty one, though.
Oh, come on.
Raphael's the angsty one.
Why would you want to be the angsty?
Because he's the cooler one. He's the coolest. Nobody wants to be a Leonardo. Nobody wants to be Donatello. Name me one person who's ever said, hey, we're playing Ninja Turtles. I get Donatello. I get the stick.
Who's the nerd?
Yeah, pretty much. Where were we?
And like the megalomaniacs always
wanted. Yeah, well, Leonardo. Are we done?
I guess so.
Okay. We'll be right back.